For more information on ancient dragon Zen Gate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Taigen is away. He's been away for a little more than a week, and I think he'll be back. He may be back in town this evening. I think he'll be back in the Zenda tomorrow morning. So he asked me to do the talk tonight, which I'm happy to do. And I want to talk about Suzuki Roshi. We just chanted his name, or rather Katie just chanted his name in our dedication of merit. He was the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center. And when we dedicate merit, we dedicate to our original ancestor in India, our first ancestor in China, our first ancestor in Japan, and our first ancestor in America, who is Shogaku Shinryu, Suzuki Roshi. And I've heard about him for a very long time. Anyone who's been involved with Zen in the West has heard about Suzuki Roshi, and I always thought he was a pretty cool guy. But I had the opportunity recently with Paula Lazars to attend a meeting of a group called Branching Streams. We met in North Carolina at the Chapel Hill Zen Center, and Branching Streams is a sort of loosely organized group of sanghas in the U.S., all of which were founded by and have teachers that were trained at the San Francisco Zen Center. And there were 19 sanghas represented and 33 people, and that wasn't even nearly all the sanghas that have grown out of the original San Francisco Zen Center founded by Suzuki Roshi in the late 50s. Came over here in 1959. And I was just thinking, wow, he has had a huge impact. And one of the sessions that we had, it was a 2.5-day meeting, and we can talk about the meeting, but it's really not what I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, we were talking about how we can work together, how we can support each other, how we can learn from each other. There were some very large sanghas, some very small sanghas. We were sort of an in-between sangha or a just right sangha. But one of the sessions in the evening, which was a less formal session, had five people who actually had been students of Suzuki Roshi, and they were just asked to share personal stories about him. And I just fell in love with him. I can't think of any other way to put it. His presence was palpable in the room, and the love for him was palpable in the room, and I just got caught up in it. And so I thought I would talk a little bit about him. One of the people who spoke was a man named Peter Schneider. He said sort of casually, Suzuki Roshi, he wasn't obviously charismatic. if you've ever heard any of the tapes of him, they have recorded many of his talks. He wasn't. But he really was. I mean, the way people talked about him was really quite quite moving. It was intimate. It was personal. It was intense. It was humorous. Everybody's story was funny. So I'll give you an example. So Steve Weintraub, who was actually here once a few years ago, told the story. He said he grew up Steve Weidenberg, grew up in New York City. His parents were Eastern European Jewish immigrants who did what a lot of people in their position did. They worked very, very hard. They ran a luncheonette and some parking lots in Manhattan, and they made good, and they had this son who they wanted to, who would make good in America. He went to college and got a degree in literature, and then after he graduated, he went to San Francisco to see the world, and 2 weeks later, he ended up in the San Francisco Zen Center and told his parents, you know, he was going to study Zen, which they had no idea what he was talking about. They didn't know the word cult, but that was the idea, you know, that they were thinking. They were very worried. And so they went to San Francisco because they were calling up saying, is it a job? What are you doing? He couldn't explain it. So they went. And they went and they talked to Suzuki Roshi, and he said, after they talked to him, they told him they weren't worried about him anymore. And they said that they had talked about business, and that it was as if he had run a luncheonette. So, it was a great story, and it sort of really helped you understand him. And for me, there were several other stories, and I won't tell them now, but I might get around to telling a couple more. But to me, it not only connected me with him. Now, we're only a few degrees separation from him because our teacher is Tygen Dan Leighton. His teacher is Reb Anderson, and his teacher was Suzuki Roshi. So what is that? That's just a few degrees of separation. But I somehow, in getting connected with this human being that I had never met except through his writings, which I'll talk about in a minute, I felt much more intimately connected with the whole lineage that we talk about, you know, and that we chant and so forth. We hear about these people, you know, Tygen's been talking about this 9th century Chinese teacher, and we talk about this 13th century Japanese teacher, and you know, Shakyamuni is more than 2,500 years ago, and these are, they're very strange people that we hear these cryptic stories that weren't even written down for hundreds of years after they spoke them. And, you know, they always seemed sort of, I don't know, not real in some way. Somehow connecting with Suzuki Roshi helped me get a more personal connection with him, with all of them. So anyway, I wanted to say a few things about him. First of all, I'm going to read an extremely abbreviated biography in case people don't know. So this is just a paragraph that's in the front of a book of his talks, written by Ed Brown, who is another Zen priest that he ordained. And he's most famous for writing the Tassajara bread book, a bestseller. Anyway, the Zen master Shunryu Suzuki was an unassuming, much beloved spiritual teacher. Born the son of a Zen master in 1904, Suzuki began Zen training as a youngster and matured over many years of practice in Japan. After continuing to devote himself to his priestly life throughout the Second World War, when priests often turned to other occupations, Suzuki came to San Francisco in 1959. While some priests had come to the West with new suits and shiny shoes, Suzuki decided to come in an old robe with a shiny head shaved. Attracting students over several years, Suzuki established the Zen Center in San Francisco with a training temple at Tassajara, the first in the West. After a lengthy illness, he died of cancer in December 1971. So, think about it. He died in 1971, and in 2015, like 44 years later, people were telling these stories as if they were yesterday. That's a pretty amazing man. So anyway, there is a wonderful biography of him. It's called Crooked Cucumber. I'll explain that title in a second. And it's written by David Chadwick, who was also a student of his, who was ordained by him. And Chadwick was here as well a few years ago. He is a real character. Here is the explanation for the title, just for starters. From the time he was a new monk at age 13, so he was sent off to a monastery at age 11. I have a nephew who's 11, so I'm picturing Leo. It's just really not it's impossible for me to imagine this 11-year-old boy that I know. Then he was ordained at 13. Suzuki's master, Gyokugen Soan Suzuki, called him Crooked Cucumber. Crooked cucumbers were useless. Farmers would compost them. Children would use them for batting practice. Soan told Suzuki he felt sorry for him because he would never have any good disciples. For a long time, it looked as though Soan was right. Then Crooked Cucumber fulfilled a lifelong dream. He came to America, where he had many students, and died in the full bloom of what he had come to do. His 12 and a half years here profoundly changed his life and the lives of many others. So Chadwick and others weren't sure that Suzuki would have wanted a biography written. This was written after he died. So he decided that he would go to his widow and get her blessing for right before he would write this book. And I'll just read you a little about what he says, because it really resonates with everything I've been sort of feeling about him. So he sort of tentatively and really expecting a no for an answer said, some publisher may be interested in a book. It was suggested. What do you think? And she said, oh, thank you for writing about Hojo-san. I guess Hojo-san is the abbot anyway. Tell many funny stories. Funny stories? Yeah, but not just funny. Serious and sad ones, too, right? Everything. Yeah, but people like the funny stories. Maybe you should tell funny stories. That will be good. Hojo-san liked funny stories. Everyone will be happy to read them. So, that's really what I've been hearing, is all these funny stories. Sort of an interesting, I don't know, First time I ever put that together about him. So, I'm trying to think of which thing to say first, because there's so many funny things, so many funny stories. So his masterpiece was Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and this is, I think, how most of us learn about or learn from Suzuki Roshi. No, maybe I should have accepted that glass of water. It's a collection of his talks, and for the first 6 years that he was at San Francisco, they did not record any talks, and then it was discussed and decided that they would start recording his talks. And this was the first collection of it. They're greatly edited. And there are some people that get editing credit in the book, like Trudy Dixon. But there are others, like Marion Derby, and of course Richard Baker, who also did a lot of editing. It's interesting. I'll read a little of what Edward Brown says about editing, but if you're interested in hearing what they sound like unedited, and I won't read from this, there is in our library this very completely unedited. It's got a lot of ahs and laughter and ellipses and so forth. And we should be very grateful for these people who put a lot of work into editing this. This is what Richard Baker says about Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, in his introduction. He says, for a disciple of Suzuki Roshi, this book will be Suzuki Roshi's mind. not his ordinary mind or personal mind, but his Zen mind, the mind of his teacher, Gyokugen Soan Daisho, the mind of Dogen Zenji, the mind of the entire succession, broken or unbroken, historical and mythical, of teachers, patriarchs, monks, and laymen from Buddha's time until today. And it will be the mind of Buddha himself, the mind of Zen practice. But for most readers, the book will be an example of how a Zen master talks and teaches. It'll be a book of instruction about how to practice Zen, about Zen life, about the attitudes and understanding that make Zen practice possible. For any reader, the book will be an encouragement to realize his own nature, his own Zen mind. And then he goes on to say quite a bit more. It's a wonderful book, and on Thursday evenings here at Ancient Dragon, there's a group of people that, after a period of Zazen, has been reading and discussing these relatively short versions of talks that he gave over a period of several years. If you've read it, read it again. If you've read it again, read it again. The first time I read it, I thought, what's the big deal? And every time I read it, it becomes more meaningful and helpful in all the ways that Richard Baker mentioned in there. Here is what Suzuki himself said about it. Another funny story. He said... So this was actually published before he dies. It came out in 1970. And he said, someone showed him the... After a moment, so they showed him, they brought the box of book. After a moment, he moved up next to me and chuckled. Good book, he said, thumping the cover. I didn't write it, but it looks like a good book. Then he said, I read Zen Mind Beginner's Mind to see what the understanding of my disciples is. So I like that quite a lot. The other thing that I was going to mention, which relates to the book, is that when Marion Derby, who was the first person who had done transcriptions and editing, read him a paragraph, she said he'd often comment, "Did I say that?" So, I also like this other collection that, again, another collection of his talks, this one that I just read his little bio from, edited by Edward Brown. And I'm going to read just a tiny bit of one of the talks, but I wanted to read just some of the... This one gets less attention, but it's, I don't want to say equally wonderful, it's wonderful. I'll just read you a few titles just to give you a flavor of it. Calmness of mind, express yourself fully, freedom from everything. Enjoy your life, walk like an elephant, brown rice is just right. Caring for the soil. Okay, I'm going to read just a tiny bit from one called The Zen of Going to the Restroom. So he says, in our everyday life, we eat many things, good and bad, fancy and simple, tasty and not so tasty. Later, we need to go to the restroom. Similarly, after filling our mind, we practice zazen. Otherwise, our thinking will eventually become very unhealthy. So it really is a very, very good book, and I'm going to use it for all my future talks here until until further notice, I guess. Anyway, Brown says sort of interestingly about the translation, it's almost like translation, about the editing, and he has a long sort of soul-searching four pages or so about it. He says, they tried to do it. He said it took a long time and they kept changing. And then I'm looking for the sentence that I want and I'm not finding it. So I'm just going to tell you what I remember that it said. Basically, that upon reflection, when it was finished, it sounded very different to him from the actual transcripts, but he felt as if he worked with a number of other students, had done their best to edit it in such a way that it conveyed what they understood of Suzuki Roshi, which then sheds light on his comment that he read it to see what his students had learned from him.